Hello and welcome to the second episode of the Bikepacking Podcast. My name is Mike Ryan, and today I just wanted to talk a little bit about what bikepacking means. What is it? If you're already doing it, skip this episode. It's not of interest. I will do some routes and some more interesting stuff for you guys in due course. But, you know, a lot of people are here trying to find out what we're talking about. Look, people have been cycle touring for years. They've been travelling on bicycles and staying overnight for as long as bicycles have been invented. Thomas Stevens actually cycled all the way around the world in the late 1800s on a penny farthing. Look out for his book. It's quite interesting, some of the adventures he got up to. In those days, the kit list involved a pistol, and he had all sorts of encounters. I wouldn't say it's a great literary classic, but obviously the story is pretty remarkable. If you do a little bit of research, you'll pretty soon come across the Rough Stuff Fellowship. And they did some quite fantastic journeys on pretty ordinary bikes, actually, across some pretty rough ground. I think the 1930s was a bit of a boom town for cycling in the UK. And slightly uncomfortably, it was the cycling lobby that campaigned quite hard for a lot of the roads to be tarmacked. I think we tarmac too many myself, and it's a real joy when you come across a road that isn't tarmacked, but we can cycle along it. But access and rights of way and where to go, probably another story to come in due course. I think the modern incarnation of bikepacking probably comes from America. If you go to the website bikepacking.com, they'll tell you a little bit about the pastime, and they'll have all sorts of fantastic information there for you. One of the things they do say there, and I think it's really good advice, is the best bike for bikepacking is the bike you've got. So I would strongly recommend doing something on the bike you've already got, or you know, just a cheap hardtail is absolutely perfect. You know, you really don't need to be spending a lot of money on a bike, certainly not in the early days. Just get out there and do something. Even if you carry a kit in a rucksack, it's not the end of the world. You'll soon find one of those saddlebags are not that expensive. You can get really expensive kit, but you can also get some pretty cheap stuff as well that'll do you and get you started, because you might not like it. It is quite hard work. There's a lot of pushing your bike, there's a lot of pedaling uphill, there's a lot of rain and there's a lot of mud, and you are at the mercy of motorists some of the time as well. So for me, I try to stay off-road as much as possible. I'm an inveterate map reader. I love reading maps, and the Ordnance Survey maps have bridle wears marked on them. If you use your modern phone apps, things like Outdoor Active, you'll find you can get overlays of cycle routes like the National Cycle Network, and you'll get mountain bike routes as well. If you scoot around on the internet a bit, you might be able to find Strava heat maps as too. And there's some places where you can overlay those Strava heat maps onto the Ordnance Survey map. But, you just get out on your bike. Wherever you live, there's some country lanes. Get down the country lanes. And look, if you don't want to camp, you can stay in a pub, a hostel. You know, you can stay where you want. It's just about the journey. And if you get the journey bug, then you're away. Let me come back to the bike for a minute. I do use a hardtail mountain bike. I live in Wales, and Wales is quite hilly. So very often, we do need that bottom gear to grind the way up the hills. But also, it can be quite rough as well, it can be quite stony, quite rocky. There's some big, long downhills that are, pretty rubbly. So just having front suspension and not having drop handlebars, I don't use mountain bike handlebars, the big flats they call them. Mine is a slightly swept back, made by a company called On One Jeff Handlebars. And I find that's a good compromise. You've got enough control for downhills, and you do get a bit uncomfortable on flat handlebars all day. So that just little swerve back does help quite nicely. A lot of people will go for a gravel bike, and that's a fantastic choice. Slightly depending on what you want to do. if your bent is canal towpath cycleways, and there's some brilliant cycleways these days, particularly the disused railway lines, yeah, and little lanes and forest tracks, that sort of thing, and you can get a bit of a move on, you know, you want to cover some ground, then you can really motor on a gravel bike. You won't do the distance a road cyclist will do, but you know, you can go far and fast on good tracks. Scotland's really good for it because you've got all the estate tracks as well as forest tracks. Where it comes into its own in England and Wales is on the minor lanes, the little yellow roads. There's fewer of those in Scotland, actually. The linking roads in Scotland between the estate roads are often, can be quite busy roads, actually. But down here in England and Wales, then the little lanes are good, patches of forest, and the National Cycle Network. So a gravel bike works really well if that's what you want to do. Personally, I try hard not to be in a rush. For me, it is about the journey. Now, I hesitate because I never set off in a rush, but somehow you sometimes end up in one. You set yourself these little targets that you want to achieve, and you just keep pedaling. It's just lovely with your feet going round and round and round. It's kind of addictive. You get this little flywheel motion and you just keep pedaling, and it's hard to stop. So in my head, I have a little system. I get up, spring and autumn are the best times. It comes daylight, it's sort of seven-ish. Half six, seven-ish is great time for it to come daylight. So you wake up in your tent. For me, it takes about an hour to get organised and have my breakfast, get dressed, go to the toilet, repack my bike and get on my way. So if I'm on the way about half seven, I can pedal nicely for a couple of hours. After 2 hours, half past nine, I can stop. And I could actually stop for an hour if I wanted. I rarely do. But if I stop for an hour, then it'd be half past ten. Pedal for another 2 hours. Then it's half past 12, lunchtime. Stop for an hour. Pedal again from half past one to half past three, another 2 hours. So you've 6 hours pedaling now. Then half past four, have another hour's break and pedal for another 2 hours to half six, which takes you into camp before it gets dark. You can have your dinner, settle down, and you do go to bed early on this game. There's no point stopping up any later than having your dinner, having a bit of a read. I always take a book to read. Personally, that suits me. I usually take them on my phone. Obviously, some people take films and music and that sort of thing. I usually make a few notes from the day as well, just try and get something down on, I say on paper, but again, I just dictate to the apps on my phone, Word or Google Docs usually, actually. So if you can follow a program like that, you can cycle for 8 hours a day, but with really good rest. You know, you've got 3 hours rest interspersed in your 8 hours there. Now, look, that never happens. But if it's in your head that you can stop and you can rest, it'll help you. In Wales, it's hard to go a long way. I'm not kidding. 40 to 50 miles off-road in Wales is, you know, can be quite a big day. I cycle with some friends who are a little bit older than me, and, you know, if we do between 30 and 40, you know, that's enough for us. But when you've got a group, it's better. I mean, your lunch anyway, it's better stopping. You've got a little bit of chat, and you can share things, and it's really nice. If you're on your own, it's a bit harder to stop, and you don't need to. You can just go at your own pace. If you want to go slow, you want to go slow. If you want to go fast, you can go fast. You know what I mean? You just keep moving. So, coming back to the bike, your choices are really gravel bike. If you want to cover some ground, you want to go on towpath cycleways, little lanes, forest tracks. But if you want to drop onto mountain bike tracks, single tracks, say you were, you know, some of the Lake District, Snowdonia, even some of the Dales, you'll just find a mountain bike is that much better, because A, you got the low gears, B, you got front suspension. So for me, the hardtail does everything, because if I'm on a cycle track or a canal towpath, for example, I just have to keep telling myself, I'm not in a rush. Why would I be in a rush? What we've done when we've gone on this journey is we've broken life down to its simplest, absolute simplest. We pedal, eat, sleep. Pedal, eat, sleep. And after 2 or 3 days of that, you're in the groove. And it's just flipping wonderful. Wonderful it is. So, for me, certainly Wales, probably England. Hardtail mountain bike's the best. In Scotland, I can definitely see having a gravel bike on some of those long estate tracks. Big forest, a gravel bike would be a good choice. But obviously, if you're in Scotland and you have a mountain bike, then, boy, you can go anywhere, can't you? You know, you can get up some quite high mountains and you can get up some pretty rough places. So it's up to you what you do. But come back to where I started with that one. The best bike for bikepacking is probably the bike you've already got, and then see how you get on. What you won't find is a standard answer. One of my friends, Richard, still uses his full suspension mountain bike. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a good bike. It's not too heavy. And he just uses a saddle bag on the back for his kit. It's a bit big as a saddle bag. It does wobble about a bit, which I don't like. For me, having the hardtail, I've gone to a rack. I use a tail fin rack. And it's a bit more solid. You know, it doesn't rattle about as much. I've even got the tail fin bag now, the aero pack that goes on top of it. Look, it's an expensive bit of kit, but if you get into it, if you decide you want to do this, then it's really good because you can just clip it on and off dead easy. It's a pretty good size. That and a bag across my handlebars works really well. Let me stick with the bike, though, for now. I had a hardtail with 27.5-inch wheels and 3-inch tyres, which I love. I keep that for my fun bike, actually, now. I do like it. But for the journey in, a 29er, I prefer. It'll roll over most stuff. I'll get a crack on where I need to, and it's steady up the hill. So it's a 29. I've got 2.4-inch tyres on at the moment. That seems to be a nice compromise. Not too much drag if I'm on the cycleway type terrain, but it works well off on the rough stuff too. To Maxxis Recon. I really, really like the Maxxis tyres. They're not the only brand that make brilliant tyres, but this is my second set of Maxxis tyres. The first ones were a little bit too aggressive. They were sort of designed for downhill mountain biking, really, so there was a bit of friction with those on some of the trails. So these Maxxis Recons, absolutely grippy, bomb solid in terms of punctures. You know, they're so well built. This XO Plus and all sorts of stuff on there. Listen, don't scrimp and scrape on tyres. You want to be tubeless and you want to be on the best tyres that you can get, because faffing about with punches is just awful. Using these tyres, I've done things like the entire Highland 550, the entire Welsh 550. I did the Transcambrian into the Traws Eryri. But I started in Conwy, so I did 4 ways from Conwy, 3 days across Transcambrian, 4 days back up home on the Traws Eryri. No punches. So going tubeless, spending a lot of money on tyres, strongly recommend it. I have a pinion gearbox. Now, that is a luxury. If, like me, you're a mechanical nonce, you're just useless at it, then it's well worth looking at a pinion gearbox. If you're okay fiddling with your gears, they don't frighten you like they frighten me, then it is quite a big investment. But if you get a pinion gearbox, it's an internal gearbox. You don't have the derailleur hanging down at the back. Got 12 gears, pretty low gear, pretty high gear. Now it's set up. It did take a bit of faff to set up. Shout out for 4-player bikes in Cockermouth. He was really good, the mechanic there. He recabled it for me. And that bike is absolutely brilliant now with that pinion gearbox on there. I mentioned the On One Jeff handlebars, tail fin rack. Ooh, saddle. I have a Brooks saddle for me. It's a leather saddle. You can proof it. It's comfortable. It lasts forever. But just because it suits me doesn't mean it'll suit you. You need to work hard and get the right saddle for you. And they are different for males and females. For a male, I'd honestly just try a Brooks. I have no idea about a female saddle. You have to measure how far apart those bones in your bum are and that will give you some indication of what sort of saddle you need. But do a little bit of research on it, and you will find a saddle that works for you somewhere. I have a dropper post. So the beauty of having a hardtail with a rack on the back means you can still have your dropper post. And again, it's just great. You drop onto sort of a big descent, you can lower your saddle. You're going uphill, you can pop it back up again. So being able to use the dropper post for me really is good. So I like my bike now. It's really comfortable. So in addition to the bag on the back, on the tail fin, the aero pack on the tail fin, I have an Ortlieb, I think it's 13 litre, sort of an elongated dry bag, which I just strap on the handlebars. I've tried a harness and it didn't really add much. It was still awkward to put on. I would like some sort of rack on there, but I haven't seen one that works just right for me yet. So I experimented with one or two things, and I just keep going back to this dead simple dry bag and just strapping it on with two straps. There's a lot to be said for keeping things simple, you know. Before I got the aero pack on the rack at the back, I used to just strap a dry bag on there as well. But now I've got the aero pack and it's brilliant. I've got a 13 litre Ortlieb dry bag on the front. I have a small bag under the crossbar. I say small, it's full length of the crossbar. It's quite big actually, but it's not deep, so I can still get my water bottles inside the frame, because that's where your weight goes. So keep quite a lot of stuff in there. I have a cockpit on top of the bar, little bag, and that is little. That's just where I keep my glasses. Unfortunately, when you get to my age, you need reading glasses, and it's quite nice if you have poor visibility glasses, and it's quite nice if you have poor visibility glasses that have reading inserts. They have a little 1.5 magnifier in the bottom corner. So I've actually now got some plain glasses that have got reading inserts. I've got some sunglasses have got reading inserts, and I've got some poor visibility sunglasses have got inserts. So I end up carrying four pairs of glasses. So for me, that little bag on top of the crossbar is really quite handy for the different glasses. I pack them in with a buff, which can be handy as well. You know, a neck gaiter. I drop that into cold water when the weather's hot, pop it in the back of my neck to keep me cool. If it's really cold, it goes around my neck to keep the drafts out. But it's also really good just for packing stuff in, like my glasses. So that's quite handy on there. As I mentioned, water. I'll have a stem bag with water, maybe a half litre bottle in, and another stem bag that I have for snacks. Nice round stem bag is perfect shape for Eccles cakes, one of my favourite snacks. The other water bottles go in the frame. If I can get a litre one in, I get a litre one in. Otherwise, it's a, I don't know, is it 3/4 of a litre, 0.6, 0.7 of a litre, something like that. They're not always full. You don't want to be carrying too much water, because a litre of water is a kilo. But what I do as the afternoon goes on and I'm thinking about going to camp is I make sure I get them filled up. If I'm in the mountains, that's easy enough. There's streams galore, and I'm going to boil the water for my dinner, so I'm happy just getting... If I'm above habitation, not too much livestock around, the water, certainly here in Wales, is fine to drink. It's not a problem at all. But if I'm in the lower areas and it's agricultural or it's residential, then I don't want to be drinking the water out of the streams. Sometimes I get it from cafes or pubs or shops, but I'm happy just to knock on somebody. Well, I don't tend to knock on somebody's door. I tend to look for somebody in the garden, or look for a house with an outside tap, or give somebody a wave through the window. And it's one of the things I like about that is if I'm on my own, it actually makes me talk to people, because otherwise you can spend a lot of time not talking to people. If you're a bloke on your own, the kindness of strangers has to be sought. And one of the ways of seeking it is to ask people for water. People are generally really nice and really helpful and really supportive and really want a little chat. But you often have to initiate that conversation, and asking for water is one of the best ways to do it. So I fill up my water bottles before going to camp. Where do I camp? I'm happy to camp on campsites. I'm happy to stay in hotels, pubs, hostels, but it's hard to book if you don't know where you're going to be.
And obviously, the price adds up after a few days. So if the weather's at all decent, I'm camping, and I'm camping discreetly in the wild. I always call it a dusk till dawn camp. I just find somewhere out of sight of habitation, level, dry, discreet, and I stick my tent up and I sleep. And it's amazing, somewhere else turns up. You get a point in the afternoon where you think, oh my God, where am I going to stay? And I'm not kidding, something always turns up. It's quite amazing where you do end up camping. But as long as you're doing that dusk till dawn, leave no trace. Yeah, job's a good one, really. It's not too big a deal. I'll carry a few freeze-dried meals, but I make them myself now. It's quite expensive if you get buying them. I just have at home, I have a couscous and I have freeze-dried rice. And I'll add to those something to make one Indian, something to make a Moroccan, something to make Italian. So if I make an Italian, I'll put some dried onions, dried peppers, dried garlic, basil, dried tomatoes that have been freeze-dried, oregano, that sort of thing, maybe a bit of garlic in, and that'll give me a nice little Italian couscous dish. On the rice, I'll add some chilli, cumin, coriander. I might put some apricots, some cashew nuts or something like that if I've got them, to make a sort of Indian one. Almonds are good in Indian. A bit of almond, ground almonds, quite good in there. A Moroccan one, that would might have some coriander, some turmeric in. Again, some sort of nuts and things. Not that different, really. But those things I buy from a company called Tent Meals, or you can get Whole Foods online as well. They're pretty good places to buy those things. Tent Meals were really probably the best freeze-dried rice I've had, because it is tricky getting those things. But have a look in the supermarket as well. You don't just need to buy... Expedition foods are brilliant, don't get me wrong, but it just adds up on trips. So have a look in the supermarket and you might get Ainsley Harriet's flavoured couscous or something. I just flavour it myself at home. Couscous, I think couscous is probably my favourite, but you do get a bit fed up with it. So I'm starting carrying a frying pan now. It's titanium, it's an expensive pan, but it means I've got one pan for boiling water that is just used for boiling water, don't use it for anything else. And this other pan I can use. You know, I can buy a beef burger, I've done that. I bought a beef burger and some rolls, and I've had a beef burger with some onions on camp. That's been just luxury. You know, you could maybe get some chicken or some beef or some mince. If you pop in a butcher's and just get half a pound of mince or something, you can do that. Maybe carry some Tabasco sauce, just to spice it up a little bit, get one onion. You know, you can't do this in the supermarket. That's the problem. You need to go to butchers. You need to be able to buy one onion, one, you know, half a pound of beef, that sort of thing. So have a look at that. Halloumi's a good one. I'll buy a pack of halloumi. That probably do a couple of meals. And again, I like a halloumi burger or some halloumi chucked in with my couscous. So there's quite a few things you can do. Nibbling through the day can be tricky. Energy bars are fine, but I prefer jam sandwiches, hot cross buns. I carry butter, I carry jam, I buy hot cross buns or little rolls or little flatbreads or something. I have had cheese in a tube, but I'm not that keen. I prefer proper cheese. Malt loaves, probably one of my standbys. Malt loaves and Eccles cakes would be two of my favourite items to carry. Breakfast is easy. I love my breakfast. I've no problem with the breakfast. I just buy oats from the supermarket. And then I mix in freeze-dried fruit. So I mix in blueberries, raspberries, strawberries. Got something else at the moment, can't remember what it is. But they will all go in to make a nice porridge. I put brown sugar in, you don't have to. Some people put dried milk in, I don't find that adds much to it. But the freeze-dried fruit, bit of brown sugar, and... Oh, don't go for the dear oats, go for the cheap oats, because what you can do is you've got a little pot with a lid on, boil some water, pour it in, put the lid back on, give it a stir, put the lid back on, leave that for only 5, 6, 7 minutes, lid off, another little stir, and you've got porridge. You've got porridge, and it's great. I really like that. That'll usually see me till mid-morning, 11-ish, and that's where maybe a jam sandwich or a Cliff Bar or something to put me on. The worst thing I do is if I do hit a supermarket, have you ever seen those plastic dishes with a plastic top that have cut fruit in them? Melon or grapes or apple or stuff. I would never, ever dream of buying such a thing at home. But if you're travelling, boy, they're handy. Boy, they're great. I hate the plastic waste. I hate the fact that I'm paying for something somebody else to peel it and cut it up, stick it in that container. But when I'm on my bike, that's a fantastic little snack, is that? I love it. Okay, last thing is what to wear. This actually could, I don't know, I might come back to this. I am a hill walker, climber, mountaineer, so I've actually got gear from doing that that I tend to use. I wear soft shell trousers. I wear base layer. I have a thin fleece for the mornings that soon comes off, and a soft shell jacket. That's my standard sort of body wear. Depends on the time of year. I might wear crag approach shoes, sort of walking shoes with some really good quality socks. I might wear some waterproof socks, some sealskin socks. In the winter, I might wear some little hiking boots. The difficulty I have with footwear is if I'm on a longish journey and I'm camping out a lot, is drying it out, it does get wet. And that's where the waterproof socks are quite nice to put in there, to put your feet in your boots. But hiking boots work well, walking shoes work well, because you will be walking. No two ways about it, you're going to be walking up some of the hills. I never use clip-ins, I don't need clip-ins. I'm quite happy with flat pedals and some of those shoes like that. I wear cycling undies underneath my soft shell trousers, just for that little bit of cushioning. I usually have a spare pair on my bike as well, and spare socks. I have a spare base layer on my bike as well. I can usually make them last about 3 days, and then I have to put the clean ones on. So that means you can go 6 days before you need to wash some clothes. You need another set of clothes, or I do, for the evenings if I'm staying in a hostel or a pub. So I have a really lightweight pair of trousers, some flip-flops, Croc flip-flops, which are actually good for river crossings as well. I put them on if I've got to take my shoes and socks off to cross the river. Put my Croc flip-flops on, they work really well. And I have a big jacket, well, a cotton t-shirt, cotton undies as well. Beautiful putting those on in the evening if you're staying somewhere or going somewhere for a meal. And a big jacket, a big puffer jacket. Packs sound small. I've got a really good one that's kind of waterproof and warm and easy to wash. It's a brilliant jacket. I've had it a few years now, and I just keep using that. It's a mountain equipment one. I have a woolly hat and several pairs of gloves. I like to cycle in thin, fingerless mitts that have got leather palms, like a road cycling glove. If your hands get sweaty, that's quite good on the handlebars. But you also need some warmer gloves. So I've got a sort of pair of fleece gloves that I can still use my phone with, touch my phone and operate. What do you call them? Smart gloves? Smartphone gloves? Touch gloves? Something like that. And then I've got another pair of windproof gloves, like a ski glove, really. A fairly lightweight one that if it's cold, I can put those on as well. So I'll use three pairs of gloves, to be honest. Mentioned my buff helmet, cycling helmet, wear that. I take a sun hat as well, though. Very often, you take your helmet off. I know it seems odd, doesn't it, when you've been mountain biking, you never take your helmet off. But if we're pushing a bike up a hill or plodding up a hill, and it's not a bad idea to take your helmet off now and then. And a sun hat can be really useful, or your wool hat. Mentioned my glasses. I think that's it, really. Anything else we'll pick up as we go along. So, a lot of information there about bikes, about kits, about where to carry on and what to eat. Look, you can respond to this podcast with questions. You can pop onto Wales Bikepacking. I run that page, so you can ask questions there. But yeah, do interact. If you subscribe to the podcast, that'd be great, because then you'll get any updates when I do a new one. And you can give me ideas of what you want me to talk about. Hey, see you next time. Cheers.